Thanks, Rich. Thanks for asking me to lead. It's nice to be here with you all. It's past my bedtime, so I hope you get, or it's just my bedtime. I hope you get a sane and helpful message. I was thinking about as we were doing the readings, a number of things. One is that the best thing I did right here by far is that I stayed. I stayed. I never left. I kept coming back. And if I want to have a message that I want to carry a message here, my message above all is that this is the best thing I've done is that I never left. And the second best thing I've done is that I've been abstaining. Since November 30th, 1998, so it's 26, plus years already of doing this thing, and I'm maintaining a healthy body weight and probably down between 135 or 140 pounds. And I did that because I kept coming back, and I thought about I was sort of tripping out on the idea of anonymity as we were reading, and I've been reflecting on it. Anonymity to me is not just that I'm going to keep your confidence, that's obvious, and that you'll keep mine. It's the spiritual foundation, and also it's come to mean of all our traditions, and it's come to mean to me that we're all in this together, and we all share and identify with this thing, this disease that I have. I know many of you will hopefully be able to identify with me, and it's through that identification that we have this unity together, because we have a struggle that we all know, but we also have a solution, and that I've really come to appreciate that we're all sort of one collective here, and your pain is my pain, your success is my success. And I'm rooting for everybody here to get something, to hopefully carry something. Something I say helps you stay today and come back tomorrow. And that would be that's my job here. And hopefully it works. So Rich has a picture I sent him, and you can share it. And I think about it. We have newcomers here, and I think about, man, what was it like for me? Who was the guy who walked in here on November 9th, 1998, this time, right? I had gone to OA prior to that. I did some tours, like a 1 month visit and then a 2 week visit. I started in Chicago, probably, 5 years earlier, and then I did a little stint a couple years before 1998 in LA, and I never really connected, and I wasn't willing to keep coming back. And I didn't, somebody gave me a big book and said they'd be my sponsor the first time around. I never opened it. And I had an idea, like, I don't go to groups, I give groups. So I wasn't a good candidate. I wasn't a good candidate. I wasn't ready to take this in. But the guy who walked in, I was lost. I was so lost. And sometimes I thought I was not lost. And I had a lot of ideas about the way things work and the way what's going to work for me. And I know what's going to work. And if I'm honest myself, especially from now, I didn't know what I was saying. And I needed what you all had. And I needed teachers and guides to show me how to live, and especially how to live without hurting myself with food anymore, like I was. And so I got to Overeaters Anonymous, and I had, when I was just shy of my 30th birthday this time, I came that first time when I was probably like 23, 24, and then again when I was probably like 26, 27. And this is the type of weight, that guy with the white shirt that you see, who takes up a lot of room and a crowd, crowd the space. I'm a 100 pounder, and that's the guy who walked in. And it's this strange disease that tells me that I kind of know what I'm doing, and I have a lot of conviction on the one hand, but on the other hand, I'm terrified. I have no idea what I'm saying, and I kind of know that too. And my history prior to walking into the rooms is I'm an eating machine, and I try to negotiate food in my life and figure out how to make it work so I can have what I enjoy, but and try not to have too much of it, and just the right amount, and maybe this time I can try a little after I've taken a break for a little. And and I think that if you're here, you probably know this formula of good intention that you don't execute on, or I didn't execute on it, and once I start, I can't stop. And my disease was around from the, like, I don't remember not having the disease. Like, this one got me, this got me early. And I love eating. I still do. Like, I had the best lunch today. Like, amazing place, and I love it. Right? The difference now is there's a beginning, middle, and end. And once I start, I OA has given me the power to stop. But in my disease and all the efforts to manage it, my life, I got bigger and bigger. I ate more and more. I got bigger, my life got smaller. And that's that was my story. And it just started early on, and it was, I like to say this, and I don't want to spend too much time on the disease piece of it, but I'll say this. I don't want to watch the footage, and I don't want you to watch the footage, because if you saw what I did, it's just disturbing. It was a disturbing, aggressive pursuit of food. It wasn't chill. And I wasn't one of these people who, needed to close the blinds and have a, if you're, I prefer that. I prefer to do it alone, but if you have to watch me, then you're going to see me eat like a machine in that disturbing way. And I, before the pandemic, I saw an old college roommate of mine who, like, it was all ha-ha until this moment where he was staying at my house for some reason. I come from a large family, and he was out late. I wasn't with him, and I woke up in the middle of the night. He was still out, and I just took my family spaghetti bowl, like family of six kids, and I just, like, took it and I poured it over my face like I do. It was so urgent, I couldn't even get a bowl, and it just, like, went all, most of it went in my mouth, but it went all over my face. And I look up, and he's just watching me. This is my roommate of 3 years, and he told me years later, this was, he said, I never knew it was a problem. And he said, and I saw that scene, and I was, it was this disturbing moment for him. He's like, that was the moment I knew it wasn't just a funny, heavy guy. And that's just sort of the type of disturbing, not including the breaking furniture, because I'm too heavy and not being able to fit in seats. And all that comes with, for me, the disease where, I'm telling myself a story that the world doesn't want me. It's kind of true that I'm not invited to the party of the world. Why would they have a guy that looks like me? And all that comes with that. Like, it's all I knew. It's all I knew. So when I say I walked into the program thinking I know something on some level, it's just the story I knew at that time. And I couldn't have been more wrong about how I interpret the world. And I got here, and I got here November 9th. I was not 30 yet. On November 15th, I came to a meeting. Somebody at my work said, "What's wrong on November 9th?" And I said, "I can't stop eating." On she said, she was in AA for a long time, and she was my parents' age, which is kind of important. I took her seriously, and she had something, just a really strong pistol of an Italian woman in AA, little lady. And she said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I can't stop eating." So she just found a meeting on the phone. It was before, the computers were up. We got a recording of where there's an OA meeting. It's defunct now. We went, and she raised her hand, and she said, "He wants to share." And she looked at him, and she said, "Tell them what you told me." And I just announced to a room, "I can't stop eating." And she said, "Do whatever you want. Just eat four times a day, and just do that." And I'm like, okay. And then, I turned 30 on November 15th, 1998, and I had to have this cake that I didn't try. I had this tiramisu cake. I had to have it, and I shoved it in my pocket. And this was after 6 days of OA, and it was all over my pants, and it was all over. And I ate it. And it was sticky, and I ate it in the bathroom. And I was so distraught. Like, I was breaking my I can eat as much as I want 4 times a day rule. I wasn't supposed to have cake in that scenario. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous, and some people told me, said, "It's all right, it's all right. Don't start over. Like, if you're on your way from LA to New York and you get a flat tire in Phoenix, why would you go back to LA?" And then the moment, the pivotal moment for me is somebody said to me, "Hey, Adam, that's called getting drunk here. That's a form of getting drunk on food, and that's what it means to be drunk. You don't go in a bathroom with tiramisu cake in your pocket, hiding it and shoving it in your face and shoveling it down, and that's not a sober experience here." And I really heard, I heard that. And then he said to me, this was November 15th, "Find somebody who you trust and do whatever they say, but I strongly advise you don't listen to yourself." And really resonated with me, kind of like a 5150, like in matters of food, you've lost your rights. Like a 5150, for those who aren't in California, it's the when you get committed to the hospital because you're a danger to self or others. I'm like, oh, like in matters of food, I can't make sane decisions. I was deemed mentally insane. And I'm like, oh, that resonates with me. I'm fired from food. And I started thinking there's such thing as a sober experience here. And for me, it's that moment of surrender when I said, I'm out. I can't make a food decision without negotiating food back in my life. If I'm fired from the decision of what I can have and how much and when I can have it, then I have freedom. Then I have a sober experience. I really connected in that moment on November. It took me 2 weeks. From that day, 2 weeks and 1 day, to say, you know what, I'm willing to do it someone else's way. And therein laid the beginning of a profound change in my life. And I just kept hearing, no matter what people were saying, because I was alone, I was the only one talking this way. Like, I not that's not true. Let me unrecord that. I felt like I was alone in this, and it kind of fortified me because I kept listening to who's in OA, do we have permission to eat a lot? And I was listening to it, and it actually fortified my shares. I'm like, I couldn't have an abstinent experience if I in that way. And I kept fortifying what my disease means to me. And then I found other like-minded people who had, and when I came in, it just so happened to be the sort of the mantra of the time was, abstain no matter what, abstain no matter what. So keep coming back, abstain no matter what became the sort of the anchor of my experience. And therein, and so I didn't run to do the steps. Like, I know that's the I would go to literature meetings. I read the book over and over and over again, and I had this woman in my life, and this guy who taught me about abstinence. This guy who said, "Find with somebody else and trust them." Two happened to be two older people, one man, one woman, like two new parents, like my parents' age, and they taught me. This woman taught me the book. And we read it over and over and over again. I'm like, I don't understand what it means to make a decision to turn my will and my life over. And she'd patiently over and over again read it. And I didn't run to do the steps. And the guy said to me, the guy mentor said to me, he said, "You'll either do the steps or you will find a way to get out of here. You will find a way to exit." And that's been my truth here is I don't do things because they're a good idea. At least I didn't for a lot of years. I usually do things because they hurt, and then I had to, especially in the beginning. So I'm a young guy, and I've lost a lot of weight here. So they give me the mic, which is the craziest thing we do here, right? give a guy with a year abstinence, right, who's lost weight, as if I have some powerful message. I remember once speaking for 45 minutes, and I was like, this is great. I get to talk. Now I don't like it as much, but I was like, great, I can, they're gonna listen to me. And I wouldn't have called myself a program of attraction early on. And it was a process. I had a lot of mistakes that I had to make in the years. I had to learn how to get along with people. I didn't play nicely at work. I didn't talk nicely about people. I wouldn't say I was a man of integrity and honesty in those early days. And I had to learn how to make a lot of mistakes. But I'll tell you again, I kept coming back here no matter what, and I didn't keep secrets from you guys. So what I mean by that is there were people in my life who I told everything to. Keep being real. And this woman taught me that, don't worry about how you look. Worry about being honest and authentic. Don't be somebody you're not. And so I want to just walk you through this journey. Over the years, it took me 11 years to get someone to really go through the steps with me. I wasn't collecting sponsor. I was available to sponsor, but it's just a testament, I think, to kind of where I was at. It was young, and I had to make a lot of mistakes. I learned mantras. My way doesn't work, right? Sanity is not going to come from me. Step two. Step three is to the extent I'm willing to dedicate myself to spiritual action, I'm probably going to be willing to do a lot of things and walk through life in a certain way, all based on actions I'm willing to take. And step four and five are really about this what I just referred to, this habit I built of not keeping secrets and letting myself be known fully, right? Just fully known. And the humility and the ability to say, I have so many things still that I need to change in me, these struggles of character, these defects of character. And that just like sanity came at a moment of surrender. And I don't believe I could never have done this without Overeaters Anonymous. That moment where I took direction and I said, fine, I'm fired, I'll listen, right? I found the strength to stop eating in that disturbing way. I never for a second was able to do that in that way with that type of freedom. And then when you do step six and seven, or at least for me, I realized that it's the same thing with my brain and my character struggles and all my other appetites of life, right? It takes divine intervention for me to have any semblance of freedom. And I had to make it right with a lot of people. What did I just say? I was walking with my wife and I said, if anybody asks me about marriage, it's like, forgive the person for who they're not. Forgive your partner for who they're not. And I would say, forgive everybody for who, I know what I want them to be, but forgive them for who they're not, right? Just forgive them from the gate. Like I once told one of the men that I work with, I'm just like, before you get to your wedding, in advance, forgive everybody. It'll be make your experience much better. Forgive everybody. You collect bother, forgive everybody from the gate. And the last thing I'll say is that there's a practice here, step 10, 11, and 12. There's like this, it's beautiful thing as I keep getting to deepen my practice. And I think the best thing in life I've ever done is in these rooms, right? I'm a very, very big part of a community of 100-pounder men that, by accident I had this idea. By accident, I didn't have time. I was working like a machine, and I have this thing that's probably one of the more meaningful things that no one will know about at my funeral. Right? The thing that I'll never ever no one will ever know about the how I contributed to this part of OA, and giving back in that way has meant so much. So I'll leave with this. I came in, I say this often, I wouldn't have picked me as an employee, a son, a friend, a spouse, a father, and I would pick me in most areas today, right? I still wouldn't marry me. Sometimes I thought that I would for a little bit, but I still find myself a little bit difficult in that domain. But but even with that, I'm not that guy, that picture you saw, I'm not that guy anymore. That guy is not the driver of my life. And if you're new and you're here, and you're lost, or you've got a lot of ideas, I just keep coming back, and hopefully someone like me or the next speaker will say a message, will say something that helps you to come back and be a student of this thing like I was, and hopefully it'll change your life like it changed mine. Thanks for letting me share, everybody.